Just one slide to get you in the mood. You've probably seen this a lot. I know you had many talks on dark matter a couple of weeks ago. But here's something you may have seen from the CREST-2 collaboration. It shows bounds on the cross-section of WIMP nucleon interactions. I'm missing the hockey sticker. Thank you. Much longer than my pen. Various experiments are looking for direct detection of weakly interacting massive particles that might be responsible for the dark matter that appears to be observed out there in the universe. So here are some bounds. The cross-section as a function of WIMP mass should not be above these bounds. On the other hand, here are some closed curves that are consistent with actual detection of WIMPs. However, most of the closed curves are already ruled out in some sense by these other curves, and the closed bands are in different places from one another, so the situation is not resolved. The only reason I show this plot is just to point out that the electroweak scale around 250 GeV is up here, and there is some discussion recently about WIMPs somewhat lighter than the electroweak scale. So if I told you that I was going to look at a simple Technicolor model, which is meant to solve the electroweak symmetry breaking issue, you might say it would sound like the dark matter particle should have a mass in that range, whereas I want to say that the mass is actually going to have its natural scale somewhat lighter than the electroweak symmetry breaking scale in our particular example. So I'll just go ahead and tell you the story, but that's why I'm showing this plot first. So let me back way up several decades to motivate Technicolor, just to remind you of the story of how it went long, long ago. I've taken these pictures from the 1981 review, Barton Suskin. So here's the story. We know that we have the standard model. It contains quarks, it contains leptons, it contains gauge bosons. Most of these things are massive. And most of them have been discovered experimentally. The Higgs boson has not been discovered experimentally, at least not yet. And maybe we should just erase it from the standard model, since the Higgs boson is the thing that gives mass to all the other particles. You would say then everything will be massless because we don't have the Higgs boson. But then you remember that's not exactly true. The quarks and the leptons would be massless, but the W and Z, these gauge bosons that are heavy in nature, they would not be massless. They don't have any scalar degrees of freedom from the Higgs to eat and become massive in the usual language, but they will find something else to eat. They will eat the pions, the regular light hadrons that exist in QCD and are observed in nature all the time, and become massive by eating those pions. So here's the picture. You can have a W traveling along, turn into a QQ bar pair, exchange virtual gluons, virtual quarks, and antiquarks, and it can easily reappear as a W, and so this looks like a longitudinal mode for the W, or a mass term for the W if you want. You could show that exact same picture at the hadron level. Here it is. The W can turn directly into a pion and back into a W. Here's the pion propagator. Here are the two interaction vertices. Notice they're proportional to the pion decay constant. This is all very familiar because we know that pions decay through virtual Ws to lepton pairs all the time in nature. Not only would the W get a mass, but the Z would get a mass through the mixing of these SU2 weak and U1 hypercharge diagrams. The photon would remain exactly massless, as it must, and the ratio of the Z mass to the W mass would be exactly right compared to experiment, because QCD has a global symmetry that's in charge of these pions and gets that ratio just right. The slight detail, of course, that you'd be concerned about is that the W and Z are too small. Those masses are too small by several orders of magnitude. But this is the obvious place that we invent Technicolor, and people did this decades ago. So we just show the same slide again and say, now we will add a new Technicolor interaction. So instead of relying on the color interaction of QCD to give masses to the W and Z, we'll invent a new one just like it called Technicolor. So instead of SU3 color, we now have, in addition, SU2 Technicolor. I could have chosen 3, but let's keep the numbers as small as possible. SU2 Technicolor. All the same pictures are drawn, but they now mean different things. Instead of the W and Z eating the pions of QCD, they'll eat the technopions of Technicolor, which are not built of quarks, but of techniquarks. Not held together by gluons, but technigluons. Everything else is exactly the same. You just put techni in front of all the appropriate words, and it all works just fine. The photon is still massless, the Z still gets a mass, and its ratio with the W is protected by a global symmetry of techni color, so everything works just right. And now we can just proclaim that the scale of technicolor is that many orders of magnitude above QCD to get the actual masses of the W and Z exactly right. So this is what you remember from long ago. Since I want to talk about a lattice simulation, let's be very specific and say exactly which version of Technicolor we'll talk about. And I'd like to choose the simplest one, or at least the simplest sounding one. Let's choose to have a techni up and a techni down, plus no other techni quarks. Let's give them two colors, say techni red and techni blue, if you want, and no additional colors. Let's say that the techniquarks do not carry QCD color, just to keep it simple. Let's say that the left-handed techniquarks form a weak doublet, so they look like all the other fermions in the standard model. Let's say that the right-handed techniquarks are weak singlets, so they look like all the other right-handed fermions in the standard model. And to make sure there are no anomalies in the theory, the electric charges will then be plus a half for one of the techniquarks and minus a half for the other one. You could extend this in any of your favorite ways, and we could do lattice simulations there as well, but we'll just have to pick something for definiteness. Questions?
So maybe you're going to address it, but the reason why people disfavor this model is because of precision echoing.
Uh-huh.
And certainly the simplest model is just pulled up.
So you would say that the S parameter, for example, is true.
For example, yeah. I think that basically boils down to some sum rules, where is it? Which resonance is not right.
I'm not going to concern myself too much about that. So you may not want to take the attitude that the model presented here is an excellent candidate for real physics, the real solution to our standard model problems. But you may want to say this is the obvious starting point. This is a template or a first pass at what you might want to embellish to create a more realistic model. So I'm happy if you want to take that point of view. All right, so let's go ahead. We've mentioned the gauge symmetries of the standard model, including a technicolor extension. But the global symmetries are particularly important for today's discussion, so let me mention those now. You remember in QCD, so this slide is about QCD, which we all know and love, or at least I do. And the next slide is going to look just like it, but be for technicolor. Again, using the analogy between color and technicolor. So in QCD, there is a global symmetry, SU2 left, and also SU2 right, which is directly visible in the Lagrangian. Here is the Lagrangian of QCD with mass terms set to zero for these very light up and down quarks. So you notice that the left-handed quark appears in a term all by itself, and the right-handed quark appears in a term all by itself. Up and down are both combined in Q left and Q right. So you can do a left-handed rotation on this term, and it remains invariant. Right-handed rotation there remains invariant. Of course, if you add mass terms to the Lagrangian, then a Q left and a Q right appear in the same term. So when the mass terms are not zero, we don't have the larger symmetry group. We have the smaller one. SU2 vector, this one comes from promising to do rotations on left and right at the same time by the same angle, if you want. But the interesting thing that we're used to by now, but I still think it's interesting, is that dynamical symmetry breaking happens, and that means that as you take these masses to zero, a Lagrangian re-inherits its larger symmetry group, but you don't see it in nature. In nature, you still only see the smaller group. It's as if there were still masses for the quarks, even though you didn't put any in your Lagrangian. Specifically, what do I mean? Well, as one of many examples, you know that there's a vector meson called the rho in QCD. There's also an axial vector meson in QCD, and their masses are completely different, almost differing by a factor of two. But they would have to be exactly degenerate if this theory really had this larger symmetry group of SU2 left cross SU2 right. So what do we say? Well, we say that the vacuum broke the symmetry. There are vacuum expectation values. Or equivalently, if you want, you can say that there are dynamically generated mass terms that reduce the symmetry from here to there. The quarks gained effective masses in the theory through the dynamics of the interaction. Okay, so now I'll show the next slide for Technicolor, and I might have expected it to be the very same story again, since Technicolor was just based directly on QCD color. But the gauge groups turn out to be slightly different in the version of Technicolor that we've been talking about so far. And you can look back in the literature to read about this also. In our SU2 Technicolor theory, the Lagrangian without mass terms has a larger symmetry group than SU2 left across SU2 right. It has SU4 global symmetry, and here's how it looks. All left-handed and right-handed quarks appear in this kinetic term right there. If I add in masses for the techniquarks, then in some not too elegant representation, there's the mass term for the techniquarks. E is a constant matrix shown here. I'll come back to these slightly on the next slide and give a little bit more information, but just as the overview, this respects an SP4 symplectic group symmetry. This respects an SU4, and that's analytic from the Lagrangian. So then you would say, well, when I look in nature, or in my case, when I run a lattice simulation, I should see all the dynamics that are present in this theory. If I turned off the technicork masses, would I really see this symmetry that is there in the Lagrangian? Or would it be dynamically broken, perhaps to this? By analogy in what happened in QCD on the previous slide. So we can make the claim and then check it by direct simulation that even without technicork masses, the hadron spectrum will appear in SP4 multiplex, technihadron spectrum, rather than SU4 multiplex. So let me on the next slide go back and point out a little bit more detail about why we didn't just have SU2 left cross SU2 right, and SU2 vector, as we did in the case of regular color. Of course, the straightforward way for you to check whether I understand anything or not is just to go back to the previous slide and do the transformation yourself. So take the capital Q, which had four entries on the previous slide, and perform an explicit SU4 transformation. And you may want to do it infinitesimally. Sometimes that's simplest. So here's what you might do. Multiply the original Q by this 1 plus something, where capital T are the 15 generators of SU4. You can choose any office you want as your arbitrary transformation. And you would find that the kinetic terms, the entire Lagrangian with no mass terms, is invariant under this transformation. But along the way, you had to make use of the fact that the fundamental representation of the technicolor gauge group is real. And this is only true for two technicolors. For three technicolors, you wouldn't have seen this large SU4 transformation. It would be just like QCD. And in that case, you would be back to forcing yourself to have the left-handed and right-handed fields in separate multiplets and view them as separate terms. So it's an accident of choosing a particularly small gauge group SU2.
Are your right-handed ups and downs charged with a hypercharge?
We can go back here. Yeah, these were the charges.
Oh.
So we have SU2
right,
left.
They don't have normal charges. Like if you really replicated the star model, then you will not have that SU4, right? Because hypertrophy would break that.
So it's certainly true that we're not doing a full family of Technicolor with all of the QCD or standard model type family of fermions. That's right. This is a much simpler case.
But you see what I mean, right? Like if you just chose up to have 2/3 and down to have a third, you will not get that.
You can't rotate one into the other. Their charges are different. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. Okay. I agree.
Sorry, isn't that also true here? With the, I mean, there's, you're mixing weak charge planes with weak neutral planes, right? So this is the angle 11. This is a symmetry of just the Technicolor Lagrangian, but not the standard model Cantillon.
Yeah, it's only Technicolor that I'm worried about here.
In other words, the standard,
what
the
is
standard
the
model
what
Lagrangian
is the hypercharge?
So the
hypercharge on the left-handed guys.
Right. The left-handed guy should have zero hypercharge, I suppose. And the right-handed guy should have plus or minus a half.
Yeah, then it's a little more involved. Your SU4 symmetry is broken even with a standard model.
By the standard model gauge interaction.
Right.
Right. So you can view this as a limit if you want. I'm only going to do the technical.
I'm just saying it because it will affect your Goldstone problem.
Right. So some Goldstones will become approximate Goldstones.
Which may be good for what you want.
Yeah. We'll come back to that later. That's right. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Everybody's happy with that? Feel free to ask more or comment more at any time. Okay, so we were here. Yeah.
Just previous slide. So your Q is actually four line fermions.
You want to go back to this one? Yes.
Okay, so how can you contract this gamma consciousness? What's the definition for D? Has to be two.
Each
your gamma matrix is maybe larger than the.
Each of these things is a Dirac spinner. Is that what you're worried about?
So you have two Dirac spinners again.
One, two,
so
three,
each
four.
Right, each individual, the UL is a Dirac spinner, that sounds right.
Yeah, this is a vector of four Dirac spinners.
Okay.
Was that what you were worried about?
So how does that interact with this pure?
So this center piece multiplies each of these. Right. This should be viewed as a big diagonal four component matrix. Sorry for the notation.
Back in the day, there were all the arguments by Papa with people. If you gave me SUN with NF flavors, they would have an argument that in some cases could tell you which group was broken by the dynamical symmetry breaking.
Uh-huh.
If it applied to this model, what would it have said?
I think it will say that we should see SU4 break to SP4.
So SP4 is kind of a party line.
That's what I expect. Yeah, that's what I expect. Okay. So if I do the explicit transformation on the previous slide, neglecting all interactions except Technicolor, then I'll find that in the special case of n equals 2, the fundamental representation is real, and therefore the kinetic terms are invariant. But the mass terms, if I have non-zero masses for my Technicolor fermions, they're not invariant under SU4. What I find if I do this explicit transformation is that a Lagrangian goes into itself plus this correction term infinitesimally. So this is only an invariance if this extra term is zero. And this extra term is zero, I should say capital C is the charge conjugation matrix. Minus I times this Pauli matrix is an anti-symmetric tensor in color space. So this is just a little color and Dirac transformation that makes the Lagrangian correct. But it's not zero. So this extra term would only vanish if what's in this large bracket here is zero. And where E is the constant matrix as defined there, it turns out that setting that bracket to zero is exactly the definition of an SP4 Lie algebra. It has 10 generators rather than 15. 10 of our 15 capital T's then have the the property that the bracket vanishes, and the other five do not. But it's just me learning about basic group theory at this stage. So what should I expect? Maybe what should I have expected from what people understood long ago? In QCD, there is a non-zero vacuum expectation value, which says that U bar U and D bar D are equal to one another, and they're not equal to zero. This is what we know from QCD, and you can test it either experimentally or lattice simulation. And these extra terms have precisely the form of mass terms for fermions in the Lagrangian. Therefore, the pattern of symmetry breaking is precisely starting with the gauge group of massless fermions and arriving at, sorry, not gauge group, the global symmetry group of massless fermions and arriving at the global symmetry group of massive fermions. There are 3 plus 3 or 6 generators on the left-hand side and only 3 on the right-hand side, so 3 generators were broken. Another theorem says there should be 3 Goldstone bosons, and there are the pions. Modulo explicit masses and gauge interactions of other kinds and so on. But just in QCD as it stands, with no explicit masses, they would be exact Goldstone bosons. So now in the Technicolor model, we might expect the same thing. UU bar and DD bar should be equal to one another, but not equal to zero. The symmetry breaking, since these look just like mass terms for fermions, we would expect to start with the global symmetry group SU4, which is what the Lagrangian has without explicit mass terms. But that should be broken dynamically to the symmetry group that would exist with masses, even if we don't put masses in the Lagrangian. This is the result of dynamical mass generation. Breaking from 15 generators to 10 generators would mean that there would be 5 Goldstone bosons in the spectrum. And so, if this works, then I should see 5 Goldstone bosons in my lattice simulation.
But in this SU2 case, you also have other singlet, like you transpose SU1, you also see the SU2 color symmetry. So, can that thing also have a condensate?
So, could there be other condensates other than this? You could propose all kinds of things, I suppose. So let me tell you what happened in the lattice simulation, and then we can come back in hindsight and discuss options more. Is that okay? Sorry to not say anything right away, but we can revisit it. This might go some way towards the conversation you were starting also. If I want to do a lattice simulation, then I need operators to create the hadrons that I might look for in the lattice and then annihilate them at a later time in the lattice simulation. So what kinds of operators could I discuss? In general, thinking along the lines of QCD, I could imagine mesons and baryons. Maybe you'll call them here technomesons and technobaryons. Of course, in our two-color theory, a baryon has only 2 entries. 2 quarks, so it's a di-quark type baryon rather than a 3-quark object. But here we go. I could have U bar D or its antiparticle D bar U with any sort of Dirac structure inside to make it scalar, pseudoscalar, vector, etc. Or U bar U plus or minus D bar D. These are obvious meson operators to think about. For the baryons, I could have U transpose D, or D transpose U, its antiparticle. You might try U transpose U, but it turns out that these operators exactly vanish. They are the conjugate of themselves, if you want. So these are the operators that I will look at in the lattice simulation. To perform an explicit lattice simulation, then, we need to use one of those operators. Here's an example. Let me pick the U bar D technomeson operator to create with a dagger at some location X and then annihilate later at some location Y.
What did you say it's binding?
If I back up a slide. If I tried to write down operators where I use the same flavor, U and U, or D and D, then those operators should be exactly zero.
There's no string that cut contents of the property. But it's necessary to the contents. There's no flavors.
There's no
flavors. What about Marana Master? Marana Master.
No, but
people have the
it's talking about three bargains. You don't there's no way you can take three of those fields. Park them and get them to the answer.
You only have two.
Right. I mean, there's just an SU2 epsilon tensor.
I'm saying this is the reason why.
Your statement is that that's an operator that exists and is not zero pivotally, but you're saying that you're going to ask whether it gets a bit, right? Or is the statement that that's an operator which is a zero if we try and.
I believe it's zero, right. I think that there's an anti-symmetric tensor coupling two identical fermions. So they can't be symmetric and anti-symmetric simultaneously. I think that's what it is. So I believe you really can't write it down. Not exactly zero, but we can try harder afterwards.
But you would ask analogously whether these other type of variants get them or not. Right.
Yeah, we could.
That's what
we could. Imagine all kinds of things, perhaps, getting VEVs or not, VEVs that are equal or unequal. If you want to think about those options, then we can certainly answer it, at least in principle, with a direct lattice simulation.
Is the statement that these are zero operators for all gamma, or are you saying that if I use the scalar, it's
zero? I believe for all gamma. I think it's not the Dirac issue, it's the color issue.
That's fine. Because normally that will change the semi-gamma.
I believe it works, but we may have to go through line by line to see if you can poke a hole in my argument. That would be good to do.
So you have to look for colored hadrons that we see.
Nothing here will be colored itself. Everything would be a color singlet for us.
Color.
Right. That's what you were asking?
So they're not white.
Singlet, whatever color a singlet is. Is that white? Okay, so the idea here was to try and calculate the correlation function that we should deal with in the lattice simulation. We have to have a creation operator at X, an annihilation operator at Y. You can turn these into traces. This is a trace over both Dirac and color indices. And you get a D propagator and a U propagator, standard looking thing with Dirac structure on either side. Or in the baryon or diquark case, you can have a creation operator at X, annihilation operator at Y. You get a somewhat longer looking but not that different style of trace over Dirac and color indices. And in fact, there are standard relations, both for the transpose of a propagator and for the charge conjugation matrix, that would allow you to shrink it a little bit. And it turns out that this is exactly the same trace that we had above for the meson. So the technobaryon and technomeson give you the analytically identical correlation function. We didn't need any lattice simulation to tell us that. It's just pencil and paper. That certainly does mean that since in a lattice simulation I will fit this to the appropriate form summing over actual hadron states, and I'll fit this summing over actual hadron states, of course the fits will be identical. So every baryon is degenerate with a technomeson. Although there are degenerate pairs, they have opposite parities, and if I had spent a few more minutes on that previous slide, we could have seen it. The angular momentum of the meson and the baryon are the same, 0 or 1 or something. But the parities are opposite. Every scalar has a pseudo-scalar partner. Every vector has an axial vector partner. And so now we can imagine what the 5 Goldstone bosons might be in this theory. If you believe that the 3 technopions should still be Goldstone bosons, then you would say there must be 2 more. The partner of the pi plus and the pi minus will be not pseudoscalar but scalar technobaryons, which are exactly degenerate with the charged pion. So there must be Goldstone bosons also, if we believe that the pseudoscalar mesons will be. But this one has no partner. That's the operator that would have been 0. So the number 5 is coming out quite naturally. The 3 pseudoscalars will be eaten by the W and Z if there's no Higgs. Standard thing, we can't stop them from getting eaten. The other 2 will be left over, so they would be the dark matter candidate and its antiparticle. You might want to imagine that in the early universe there's a technobaryon asymmetry, and so what's left over after pair annihilation, for example, is this one, say, or that one, some single technobaryon and its antiparticle is gone. In Technicolor, that's not what we want. I know it sounds different.
See, that's a negative part. No, I don't think that's true. Yeah. The physical Higgs boson has a positive parameter. The single Higgs has a negative parameter.
Because you
would
split
what? No, the imaginary part, if you're talking about the neutral component, the imaginary part gets eaten, that thing has a negative parameter. This is what he's saying. The negative part of the state is hidden by a W and Z.
That's correct. The negative parity, the pseudoscalars get eaten.
Now, I mean, the longitudinal part is del phi and del pi, right? So that might be why you're thinking of positive parity. Because the vector value thing, the derivative del mu acting on the pseudoscalar, has positive parity. But the thing, the scalar that gets eaten is definitely a pseudo.
Because the standard model is going to have a scalar.
You're talking
about
the physical
guy
that's not eating, right?
I know that folks on W is 1 minus spin 1, but longitudinal part is. Anyway, I don't want
to. No, that's good. Thank you. So I'll carry on, but we have lots to talk about afterwards. I guess we're done with this slide. Let's now go ahead and actually run the code. And we're going to do this in a very standard looking fashion. So you just take the Wilson action from long, long ago, the very beginning of lattice QCD and still used in some instances today. This first term in lattice language is just the kinetic energy term for the technigluons, the gauge field in the simulation. The other terms with psi fields in them are the fermion terms. So these are the techniquarks coupling with their covariant derivative. This capital U is again the technigluon. So this is a standard Wilson action. It has 2 parameters, a bare mass M0 for the techniquarks, and this gauge coupling, which appears as beta in the action. So what we'll do is 6 different simulations. We'll choose 2 different numerical values for beta, 2.0 and 2.2, and in each case, 6 different M0 bare fermion masses, just so we can extrapolate around a bit and learn where we are in parameter space. All the lattices will have 16 sites in each of the 3 spatial directions and 32 sites in the time direction. Electroweak interactions are perturbative, so I won't show them here, although they may turn, as you mentioned, Goldstone bosons into pseudo Goldstone bosons, etc. the first thing you might want to do is choose a set of gauge ensembles that you'll store on your disk and use to calculate physical observables. So to do that, here's an example. Set beta to 2.2 and choose some representative values for the other Lagrangian parameter. You start running the code at the beginning of the day with, say, all the gauge links set to the identity matrix. And then you let them evolve by minimizing the action of your theory until they quickly thermalize and then they fluctuate around some value. The thing I'm plotting here is a standard little simple diagnostic, the average plaquette. You could calculate some other quantity if you want. And so you see some fluctuation after a thermalization of on the order of 100 steps of the algorithm, then it fluctuates on the scale of a few configuration numbers. So our ensembles will be to store number 320 right there, number 340, number 360, and so on up to number 1,000. And the results that I show you from now on will come from ensembles built like that. At each lattice, typically you choose a lattice site as your source operator and you'll create quarks and anticorks from that site. We've done something slightly different to try and have smaller error bars, statistical error bars. We're using U1 wall sources, so you have a random U1 element multiplying every site on the lattice individually, and this will just give us better statistics. It's a technical thing. Other people do that also, some other people. First thing you might, yes?
How much memory do you need to set?
How big are these files that we save?
Yeah, the entire thing, how much is it?
Oh, it's not a lot. Several, I don't know if it would be a terabyte. Probably less than that. I could count.
Several hundred gigabytes.
I think it would be on that order. All 12 ensembles. But we have only 35 configurations per ensemble. So maybe it's smaller. I could calculate. It certainly wasn't the problem. For your interest, all of this sits on SharkNet. And I had no problem.
Quick question. When Technicolor model is 76 years old.
Yeah.
And it's got by replicating QCP.
Right.
Is that a really strong interaction?
Right.
By the tech.
Right.
So you said something that you're using perturbation too?
No, we're not. If you
using a lattice.
Yeah, yeah, ours is non-perturbative. Everything I show is non-perturbative. Other interactions that may have an influence could be handled perturbatively if we wanted to, which we don't right now. Yeah, good. That's exactly it. Important point. Wilson fermions. Yeah. Just something simple. Fast and simple, that's all we wanted. It's just exploring at this point.
So what does it mean? It's just in practice,
it's not trivial in the sense that there are no doublers in the theory, if that's what you mean, but they're just heavy fermions, and we don't have exact chiral symmetry. We're not worried about that. Yeah, something simple. So to find out what the parameters in our Lagrangian mean, I don't really want some bare quark mass, which in the Wilson action it has an additive renormalization constant. It doesn't even go to zero when the quark mass vanishes, right? I would like to have some more physical definition of the quark mass. So you could get it from the PCAC relation, partial conserved axial vector current. And here it is written in a lattice language, but you see it easily enough. The numerator is the time derivative of some axial field, okay? And the denominator is twice the pseudoscalar. And that ratio should give me the quark mass, at least when I'm far, far away from my source operator, so that the lightest hadrons dominate these channels. The source operator is at time step zero, and I have periodic boundary conditions. So the farthest I can get away from zero is 17. So right here, I should have a relatively flat horizontal constant fit to that number. The quark mass, and I do, you see, over quite a range of time steps. So I could read off some mass for the quark with this particular choice of bare parameters. these masses are in lattice units. We'll still have to fit the overall physics scale in GeV, if you want. We'll come to that later. So if I did that 12 times for each of our 12 choices for the bare parameters, then here at beta of 2.0, you see a nice linear relation between the Lagrangian mass, bare mass parameter, that is, and this PCAC mass. And I can read off the bare mass parameter that tunes the PCAC mass to vanish. And similarly over here, beta of 2.2, straight line, extrapolating down to vanishing PCAC quark mass.
So what is the unit
right. In my Lagrangian, there is no lattice spacing. It's assumed to be unity, if you like. And these are the numbers that literally get typed into the code. So they're units of the lattice spacing. Whoops, I think we skipped one. There we are. So the first thing you might want to see is a set of Goldstone bosons. So as a function of that PCAC quark mass, we should see, if we have Goldstone bosons, we should see that the Goldstone boson mass goes like the square root of the quark mass. So if I plot m pi squared as a function of the quark mass, I should see a straight line, which should vanish when the quark mass vanishes, PCAC quark mass. And we do. This red curve is a one parameter fit, starting at 0, 0, and representing a best fit to those six data points. You see it fits nicely. Over here, this is a one parameter fit to these three points. We've chosen a large enough range, in this case, of quark mass, so that up here we see curvature, where the quark mass is heavy enough that there are corrections. You'd see them at higher order in chiral perturbation theory, for example, to this relationship. And there they are, nicely observed. And down here, our pion, our quark is so light that the pion is so light that it can travel quickly and far across the lattice. Periodic boundary conditions, it bumps into itself on the other side and notices it's in a small volume. And this is exactly what you should see, something off the curve when you get a finite volume effect. And I want to emphasize that these plots are the exact plot you would get for all five Goldstone bosons, because numerically, analytically, it's exactly the same calculation. So there are five Goldstone bosons, represented by the fact that we have something going like the square root of the quark mass to zero.
Well, really, yeah. You first get the color models. You want to make the good parameterized mass. So you introduced the extended technicolor.
Yeah.
How does that fit in?
I'm completely ignoring extended technicolor for this talk, so that all of my fermions are still massless.
Massless?
Yes.
That doesn't agree with experiment.
It definitely does not agree with experiment. So this is just a starting point. This is just a template. I want to count Goldstone bosons. I want to do simple things. I want to give masses to W's and Z's. But to really agree with physics, of course, we need something beyond this, added in addition to what we have here. Absolutely, yes. Absolutely.
Do you have the higher order of the chiral perturbation correction and the body correction, is there an analytic function that you can fit that to?
In principle, yes. Certainly I know the functional form, and I could fit these and it would look nice. But do I know the actual number for this choice of parameters? I think we'd have to do some more work, and it should be done. We should map out some more mass parameters, some more beta parameters, get a better control over this. For example, here, to really convince you this is a finite volume effect, I should run on a larger volume, and it should move on to the curve. This can be done, and we haven't done it. But to really convince you, that should be done. I'm claiming from QCD experience that I'm not at all shocked by this. But that's not the same as really proving it. This should be done, and it can be done. OK, so if we believe that we've seen five Goldstone bosons, then you should say, what about all the other technohadrons in the spectrum? They shouldn't be massless. Hopefully not everything is massless. And it seems like everything is not massless. For example, okay, these black points are the ones we just looked at, but I'm plotting now the mass rather than the mass squared. So you should imagine fitting these by eye to a square root function which will quickly come down and go to zero when the quark mass vanishes. We know that works from the previous slide. But everything else, all the other hadrons should be linear, not square root fixed. So they'll go to non-zero values. Here's one for the Techne rho, which is the next lightest thing. And then the green and blue curves are a first attempt at the scalar, zero plus, and the axial vector, one plus. I caution you that some of these numbers are larger than one, and since this is on a lattice, that's our cutoff scale, right? One is where lattice artifacts become hugely important. So you should expect that I should be getting my masses significantly below one before you start to think there's real physics there, not just the lattice artifact. But at least some of them are getting down below one. Certainly the Techne rho is down below one, where we could start to make reasonable statements about those masses.
You have beta equals 2 and beta equals 2.2. Are we supposed to compare them to see if we're getting roughly the same answer?
For now, all I can say is that these are two examples. What you would really like to see is that I had 4 or 5 beta values, and then we would extrapolate to beta of infinity, which would be the continuum limit. And in that limit, then there'd be no lattice artifacts left. But for now, all I can show you is that we've run on a couple of betas, and qualitatively, you see something very similar. Perhaps the data at beta of 2.2 look a little nicer. That's good, because this is the direction you want to go. Larger beta is towards the continuum limit. So it's really an exploratory study, and this is a first pass. That's something that, if it's interesting, could be done in more detail. One little side remark I wanted to make also, and I'm conscious of the time, we'll finish quickly.
Well, you started.
We started late, so you're going to give me all kinds of time.
Yeah. You started at this time.
This is my new best friend right here.
just run through the questions.
Yeah, I will still be conscious at the time.
Yeah,
okay, thank you.
This is why you talk about
the This is the correlation function that you would fit and that I did fit to find the Goldstone boson spectrum we've already looked at. What you should say is here it looks linear, or more carefully, here, far away from zero, it looks like a hyperbolic cosine. And the fit to that hyperbolic cosine gives you the Goldstone boson mass that we found before for this particular choice. I've chosen for this plot, I didn't write it on, and I should have beta of 2.2, and the bare mass is minus 0.75. But in everything I've shown you so far, we assumed isovector mesons, which means Techne up and anti-Techne down. So that this couldn't happen, for example. You couldn't contract the U and the U bar from the source, and then separately the D and the D bar from the sink. And the reason that I talked only so far about isovector is because it's way cheaper for a lattice simulation. The way these things get done on a lattice is that you invert a giant sparse matrix, and you get the propagator from the source of your choice to all sites on the lattice in one calculation. But of course, if I was going to calculate this, I would start from the source of my choice, invert that matrix, get the propagator to all sites on the lattice, and then throw them all away except the one that happened to come right back where it started. So I have to throw away a whole bunch of my hard-earned calculation and get one little measly number out, which I then have to calculate over and over and over again, moving my source each point to try and get reasonable statistics and get a signal here for this disconnected part. This is a hard way to make a living, and therefore it's convenient just to talk about ISO vectors. Having said that, if I'm sufficiently stubborn, I might do it, and so I did do some of that here, and I moved this around several thousand sites in an orderly fashion to calculate this disconnected part. And when we combine these two, then we get the full isoscalar correlator. And what you see here is exactly what you expect to see. There is no nice signal far away from the source, in contrast to the isovector case. There is no signal far away from the source, so there's no indication that there's an extra Goldstone boson. It's not that you would have wanted one, right? It doesn't belong here. We already have 5. That's exactly what there should be, but just to show you what a non-signal would have looked like. We did that. Okay. Final thing we could measure on the lattice, Goldstone boson decay constant. You could consider a matrix element like this, pseudoscalar decays through fourth component or time component of axial, or pseudoscalar to pseudoscalar, axial to axial. Any one of these, there's a bunch of formulas here, but the important things are the meson masses appear and the meson decay constants appear. These are the things that you could fit, and the quark mass, which we already know. So we could, from this, get the decay constant, or more precisely, the decay constant divided by a renormalization factor. Okay. Here I am plotting the decay constant divided by the renormalization factor for each of our bare mass parameters. And I guess what I want you to notice here is that although I have not done the work to determine what this renormalization factor should be, but I do know that it goes to 1 in the continuum limit as beta gets huge. Right? So in the continuum limit, I could get f pi, or I could work harder and determine z in some other way, which I have not done, or not done yet. But what you notice is that the scale in lattice units that we're talking about here, as I extrapolate to 0 quark mass, is 0.0 something. So it's significantly lighter than the technehadron spectrum that we looked at a few slides ago, where the lightest was the techne vector, the techne rho, which was 0.4, something of that order. So this is a scale much lighter than that. Since the decay constant is much lighter than the spectrum, you would say, well, I could build an effective field theory for this. I could build a chiral perturbation theory. We could integrate out everything that's heavy, leaving only the 5 Goldstones, and write down an effective Lagrangian. Here's how your 5 fields, maybe you want to name them pi, would couple to the quark level. It would just be the standard operators we've seen already. Here's the anti-symmetric color matrix. Here's the charge conjugation operator. And gamma 5 is what gives us the Goldstone boson. 5 of them, you could write them in a matrix like this, pi plus, pi minus, pi 0, pi ud, and its antiparticle pi u bar d bar. And write either a linear or non-linear form for that Goldstone boson. And in fact, this was done a couple of years ago in a more general theory than the one I'm showing you here. Although they kept all 12 of the scalar and pseudoscalar fields. But since our lattice simulation verifies that there are 5 Goldstone bosons much lighter than everything else, and we know exactly which 5 they are, 3 pseudoscalars plus 2 scalars, we can integrate out some of the fields from this paper, keeping only the 5, and write the simple effective field theory. I'm not going to do that for you, but it could be done, and we could look there as a natural starting point, integrating away everything but the 5. Okay, so that's all I had to say. Just going to show you this summary here. SU2 technicolor with 2 techniquarks contains an extra Goldstone boson beyond those eaten by the W and Z. You might view that as a natural candidate for a light dark matter particle. What we perhaps did in this lattice exploration is to confirm that the symmetry breaking really is SU4 to SP4. We've taken a first look at the masses of the various technohadrons that would exist in the theory. And we've shown that there's an effective field theory at the scale of the decay constant that contains the 5 Goldstone or pseudo-Goldstone bosons. Thank you.
Can you, is it possible to do 3-point functions to test the self-parameter and then see if it's really the one constant?
One could do a form factor. Scattering is hard on the lattice because we're always in Euclidean time. So it's hard to do pi pi to pi pi scattering. But a 3-point or 2-point function we could do. So if a 3-point function is interesting, that's manageable.
So the signal model will make a prediction for how the 3-point function is related to the 2-point.
Yeah, you're saying if we actually wrote down the effect of Lagrangian, then there would all the interactions would have an f pi in them, and you'd know exactly the ratio. Yeah, that would be fun, I think. That should be testable explicitly. It's not easy, particularly on the lattice side, but we've done form factors in QCD.
Was that enough for QCD? The case of SUV,
people have looked at the chiral Lagrangian for QCD, yes.
On the lattice, yes.
Yeah, that's right. Most of what's interesting, well, maybe that's unfair to say, a lot of the things that you might want to use the chiral Lagrangian for are not accessible to a lattice simulation. But what can be done has been done. Pion form factor has been looked at, for example. People look at K-on issues on for SU3. Yeah.
Two questions. We're all looking for the Higgs pump. So the standard model is an electric pump. What terms of this pumps?
Right.
So for 36 years people have been saying. So, what happens to the Higgs pump?
That's a good question. Yes. I would love to be able to stand here and show you a secret extra plot where I look in the scalar channel and tell you what the mass of the lightest particle is in that channel in this theory. Is there some broad or even narrow scalar technimeson sitting there? The problem is I would have to deal with those disconnected diagrams where the U and the U bar from the source contracts with itself and separately the sync operator. So the only signal I have that was worth showing you from that case is the one I did show. In this extremely interesting channel, there's nothing but noise at this stage from the lattice simulation. That's not to say it can't be done. It's just really, really hard. And there are people out there in the lattice community developing much more clever approaches than I have used here to getting those disconnected diagrams. So the day may come when I can tell you whether, yes, there is a scalar candidate that you may name the replacement of the Higgs, a composite Higgs in this theory. Or that I can definitively say, no, it's really, really heavy. It's beyond the TEV scale.
So that issue is, so far we haven't seen technotron not seen any new. So particularly, we haven't seen any now, this is a one integration loss. As of today, there are 4.8 inverse 55. So we now have enough data to really see whether this is happening or not. And sudden death is the because in the next few weeks, the last stuff. This day is enough to lure out the Higgs through forcing tension. And you have all these extra particles, technical ions, technical ions. It's very important to know where they are in the mass.
Right. So I guess two important comments here. One is, since this is really just a template, as you mentioned, we have no extended technicolor. All kinds of things are massless in an exact sense here that, of course, can't really be massless in nature. So you may not be interested in too many significant digits in my output until we solve obvious issues like that. And it wasn't the goal of my project to address that. But in addition, even from this little template theory, this first pass theory, I wouldn't want to quote results here until I can tell you about the continuum limit and that I really have the systematics under control, lattice spacing effects, volume effects. everything looks as I would expect it to look so far, but that's not the same as getting precise results. And lattice people love to have their errors under control and quote things somewhat rigorously.
Something that came up a few times, and I think it's a very general problem with Technicolor, is the issue of vacuum alignment. That is related to this question of what exactly are you breaking. So does the lattice tell you precisely where the vacuum is aligned? Or is that the input that you have to?
Let me say something and see if I'm going, if I'm on your wavelength here. If I take the attitude that I want to study, I want to find exact Goldstone bosons in the massless theory, then I need to give full disclosure here, as I think we did. I'm using a Wilson action, which doesn't have exact chiral symmetry, and all of my simulations have non-zero quark masses. So I'm extrapolating along that choice. I'm extrapolating to a certain limit from the theory where quarks are massive. Is that your concern? Have I?
So what you would say is that the way I would know how the vacuum is aligned is that I would look at who is massless and count the number of massless guys, and according to that, I'll decide what symmetry was broken and what symmetry was preserved. Is that how you would go about telling me that SU4 was broken as before?
I guess I would say that we have the five Goldstone bosons that are consistent with that. They have the appropriate quantum numbers, and we looked around and didn't find any more or any fewer. So it's certainly consistent with that symmetry break.
Do you worry about how SU3 presses SU1 or SU1 like a weak
symmetry? So suppose you start with, let me just make it very ridiculous, SU100, and you want to break it to some subgroup that will give you all the lovely bottom marks that you want. When you postulate, it does that. But at some point,
that means giving it a bunch of weak charges to specify the quantum numbers on this.
Sure, but I mean, even that aside, you have to say that SU100 is broken to SO100. There is no guarantee that this is what's happening. It could be that SU100 is broken to SU1 to the 100. There could be different ways that SU100 is broken. The way the vacuum is breaking it determines all of the phenomena.
But given that he's given specific operators that are Goldstone bosons, we know.
So this is what I'm asking. Is that the only way of knowing is that of looking at who is massless and determining it? No. It's fine. I'm just wondering that's not the way you do it. You only look at what you think are going to be the massless modes, and you say that is how I identify this.
Certainly in our simulation, we have only one interaction, which is the SU2. We haven't added in anything else. It's just Technicolor. So we just have a simple SU2 gauge theory with two parameters in it, beta and the mass.
But in particular, you've shown that the current, the SP4 current, the quotient current, those guys are generating that broken direction. And I think a correlation function into the massless channel. So you're really saying that four
of those
specific
cards. Yep, that's
so,
right.
So you know who's broken.
Yep, absolutely.
And then no one else is massless.
That's right.
So it's really hard.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine an alternative that fits what we see here.
I guess you would worry about the 3-2-1 gig interactions shaping that symmetry.
Right, because once you put that in, your vacuum might have some tendency to align somewhere else.
Once you have two things aligned, you have to worry about the lineup.
Yeah, we have no comment. Yeah, yeah.
You use it better than how do you get from a Euclidean space cost?
I don't.
Okay.
Is there something?
He's a real man.
Fortunately, it's easy to extract masses. Fortunately, masses of particles are easy to extract without saying anything about whether I'm Euclidean or Minkowski.
Well, let's consider the time. Let's end the speaker once again. And